Does again, I'm going to state the lead.
The Joint Committee on Tax Credits will come to order. Colleagues, we have a full agenda today, so we'll go ahead and get started. We're going to start by reopening the public hearing on House Bill 3174. And colleagues, you have before you an amendment that was passed at the last committee. It's the Dash 1 amendment. And if Deborah Buchanan is here from the Department of Revenue, it would be great if you could talk to us a little bit about the Dash 1 amendment.
I wasn't quite prepared for this, so I apologize. The Dash 1 amendment is intended to clarify what the policy of the legislature is as far as expenses that qualify for the research credit and whether or not they can also be
And I'm sorry, could you introduce yourself?
Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Thank you. Whether those expenses also qualify for a deduction under Oregon law. Under the federal law, the taxpayer can claim a research and development tax credit but cannot use the same expenses for the for a deduction. They have to reduce the amount of a deduction if they're using the expenses for a credit. In Oregon law, it's not clear whether or not that same rule applies. So the expenses that are used for the R&D credit, it isn't clear that they also cannot be used for a deduction, and the amendment would make that very clear in the law.
Chair. To your knowledge, have people been doing that, declaring both a credit and a deduction?
Co-Chair Burdick and Co-Chair Bailey, we have had cases, audit cases, that we've looked at that and made adjustments to the returns because they have taken both the credit and a deduction for those same expenses.
Because this, follow up, Mr. Yes. Chair, because isn't there some general rule that you can't take both a credit and a deduction for the same thing?
Co-Chair Burdick, there actually is not in Oregon law. In fact, if you look at some of the statutes, they specifically provide that no deduction is allowed if the expense is claimed as a credit. Others do not have that specific language. And in fact, we do have a statute, I believe it's 317.303, that says if the taxpayer is required to reduce their deduction because they're taking a credit, a federal credit, then they're allowed to restore the deduction for Oregon so that they don't lose the benefit for Oregon if they're taking a federal credit. However, it said the distinction here is that you have an Oregon credit that is modeled on the federal credit, so there's a little confusion as to whether that applies.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, final follow-up. Would it make sense to have such a provision in Oregon? Are there cases where the legislature has intentionally allowed both a credit and a deduction for the same expense?
Co-Chair Burdick, yes. In some of the statutes, it specifically provides that there's no adjustment to basis, for example, if a credit is claimed. So in that case, if a taxpayer has a basis in an asset that's being used as a claim for a credit, the legislative policy is there's no deduction or no adjustment to the basis there. But there hasn't been an overall policy statement that if an expense is used for a credit, it cannot also be used for a deduction.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, this might be an area we want to look into a little more past this credit.
Agreed. Any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you.
For your patience.
And I'd like to call up a panel of Jim Craven, Jack Isselman, and J.L. Wilson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Craven, representing Tech America, the nation's largest trade association representing the high-tech industry. I'll be brief because I know there's a lot of people behind me who want to talk about a different credit, and we all want to listen to that. So we're here to support House Bill 3174. I think the bill still has a blank in it as opposed to years, and I think that'll be something you all will sort out as the weeks come ahead. In previous testimony in other committees, we suggested 6 years, only because that's been kind of the default in other credits over the years, but that's something that needs to be sorted out, I think, as we wrestle with all these tax credits. I want to start by just saying that our member companies are not tone deaf to the challenges that you have before you in this session. We understand that you have momentous challenges in balancing the budget while continuing to try to provide for economic growth so we can dig our way out of the hole that we're in, and we do want to work with you in the coming weeks on those challenges, and we understand that you have a big mountain that you need to climb here as we try to wrap up this session. I think you heard some good testimony from real companies on Monday, so I won't reiterate what they told you. I think you heard that there are companies that use this credit and appreciate it and put it to good use in hiring additional technical people and trying to make their companies competitive. I want to point out that this is not just a credit that's used by large companies in Oregon. You have a couple letters that came to me unsolicited. I don't even know these companies. They found somebody told them that I work on this issue, so they emailed them to me, and I had copies made for your staff. Two very small metal companies in Central Oregon who evidently take advantage of this credit at the very smaller level and find it advantageous. So it is a large, medium, and small company issue. I wanted to point out that sometimes we talk about R&D credit, and I'm not sure that everyone actually understands what it's for. And I think you heard that from the companies who testified Monday, that primarily this is a credit against the cost of hiring technical people. So it is really a corporate income tax credit that helps offset the cost of technical hiring. That's what it's for, and that's how it's used. And most of the costs that are affiliated with qualifying for this credit are personnel costs, usually at high-wage technical jobs. Second to last point, that just to point out in this whole debate about tax credits, that there are different kinds of incentives that we do in the state. There are what I would call direct incentives, and I don't want to open up a debate about Betsy, but in terms of Betsy, you apply for a credit, build a wind farm, or you apply for a credit and build a solar factory. Those are sort of application-based credits where you fill out a form and a government agency says yes or no, and that's the way it works. But there are a lot of tax incentives that I would argue are more sort of indirect, and R&D is one. It is based really on federal calculations, but it is a line on the return subject to audit, as are a lot of elements of the tax code, such as charitable deductions or home mortgage interest. Those are credits that you report on your Schedule A or whatever, and they are subject to audit, but they're not directly overseen by a government agency per se. So just to point out that there are different kinds of incentives, and they need to be judged sort of on their own merit would be our argument. I guess my final point is just to recognize that as difficult as it is to quantify, there is something called the business climate. And I think you heard a little taste of that from the companies on Monday. When asked, why do you think this is valuable, they said it is part of the mix. It is part of a number of elements that make Oregon an attractive place to locate and grow and innovate. And we would argue that while not always subject to mathematical formulas and applications, there are issues in Oregon that create a friendly business climate that make this a place that companies want to grow and innovate. So with that, I will wrap it up and allow my colleagues here to speak their piece unless there are any questions.
Thank you, co-chairs and members. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing Associated Oregon Industries. Very quickly, we support House Bill 3174 and all like bills that you will see that extend the sunset for the Oregon Qualified Research Tax Credit. The reality is that most R&D costs are embodied in payroll, and so the reality is that the R&D tax credit is an incentive for payroll expansion, job expansion, and highly compensated technical fields, which I think is a desirable outcome. We represent a lot of companies who have facilities, plants in various states, with Oregon just being one of the states that they operate in. The reality is that most states offer similar credits. And so it makes sense to us that when companies allocate their R&D dollars, allocate their expenditures, that Oregon is best positioned to capture some of that payroll and the increase in payroll that is required to utilize the credits. So we think it's vital to our companies. We think it's vital and produces good outcomes, which is more highly compensated technical jobs here in Oregon. Thank you.
Members of the committee, for the record, Jack Esselman, I appear before you today on behalf of Oregon Bio. We represent an industry with over 631 bioscience establishments and 13 life science research institutions in the state. We are here also in support of House Bill 3174 and the extension of the sunset, the R&D tax credit. Our story is one more of smaller companies that, while they may not take direct advantage of the tax credit, certainly benefit from the research climate that's created by the tax credit. I've distributed a document with information on our industry. To quickly summarize that, what you'll see is our industry outpaces our peer states in terms of attracting NIH funding from the National Institutes of Health. And we've been able to sustain that over a number of years, including 21 biotechnology and life science companies in Oregon who since 2001 have been awarded over $5.4 million in grants under the NIH's Qualifying Therapeutic Discovery Project credits and grants. And these companies include Design Medics, which works on infectious diseases, Molecular MD, which is working on cancer treatments, and Bioject, which works on advanced medical devices. In Representative Gelser's district, Home Dialysis Plus is a company that has recently enjoyed $50 million in first-round venture financing that largely derives from the research environment that has been created as a result of investments made by this legislature and the federal government and our university research institutions. So with that, we urge your support of the extension of House Bill 3174, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Gutcher Berger.
Mr. Chair, I have two somewhat unrelated questions, if you'll indulge
Please.
Me. The first, gentleman, have you seen the Dash 1 amendments and your reaction?
Madam Chair, co-chairs, Representative Berger.
Yes, Mr. Constituent.
Deborah from Department of Revenue mentioned it to me the other day. I haven't seen them. I'd forgotten our conversation until she came up here. On first blush, it seems eminently sensible. I'm going to defer more to the people who do this for a living. I actually thought it was part of this part already of the code. I went back and looked, and I don't see it explicitly. Being a novice, I thought that's how they all work, but I guess there's sort of a mixed bag out there. So we'll check on them. But, I mean, on first blush, being a novice, it seems sensible, but we'll take a look.
Follow up?
You can get back to me on that. The other question is, what is the R&D credit in Washington and or California and or Idaho? And if you don't have that right in front of you, you can get back to me on that, too.
Madam Co-Chair, you have that in the printed testimony that's labeled Tech America. The fourth page is a table of states with the various rates. Now, Washington State doesn't have a corporate income tax, but they have some various R&D credits against the B&O tax okay. up in Washington State. Idaho, well, I don't want to do this in real time, but you do have those lists. Okay. California is actually it ranges from 15% to 24% based upon different calculations. So I think you look at the bottom, I think 5% is the numerical average among the 35, 40 states that have a credit, but they range from an effective rate of, you know, a fraction of a percent to an effective rate of 20.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Telford.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I have two questions, one for the committee, but one for Mr. Craven. Jim, you said, in regards to your comments on audits, now, as a CPA, I thought everything was subject to audit. And if you know something I don't, I'd really like to know about it so I can help my clients. But I guess my point is, what was the purpose of the comments about subject to audits?
Co-chairs, Senator Telfer, I probably inarticulately, what I was trying to distinguish is that there are some credits we do that are application-based credits. For instance, Betsy, you apply to the state reviews your application, grants it, doesn't grant it, negotiates whatever. R&D credit is a credit that you take on your return. It's not subject to individual stamp of approval is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, okay.
It's a line on the return subject to audit is what I meant to say.
Thank you. And then to with the dash one, are we not increasing taxes? Is that not a tax increase? I believe it is.
Interesting question.
Stop this show.
Probably a question for staff. We may want to get a ruling on that before continuing.
Mr. Chair, this tax credit is sunsetted. So anything that we put in an amendment that applies to this credit is not a tax increase.
Thank you, Senator Burdick, for that clarification.
Follow-up then? It would be nice, though, if we do approve the dash one, and I'm not necessarily saying I'm opposed to it, but it would be nice to know what the revenue impact would be with that dash one.
I think it's safe to say the revenue impact would be less negative than the revenue impact of simply passing the bill without it.
Thank you. Yes, revenue impacts are, as you know, based on current law. So I believe that comment would apply. Any further questions for this panel? All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to be heard on House Bill 3174? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3174 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2167A. Yeah. Senator Burdick has asked me where my clapper is. This will be live. There will be no additional takes. Chris, you want to start us out?
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2167 changes the total amount of the annual tax credits from $7.5 million to an amount that is blank and extends the sunset date for the credit from January 1st, 2012 to January 1, 2018. It limits the total reimbursement for the Oregon Production Investment Fund to local filmmakers to $500,000 per fiscal year. It also creates the option for the Legislative Assembly to make an annual appropriation to the Oregon Business Development Department for deposit into the Oregon Production Investment Fund. It sets the amount of the appropriation equal to the total amount that would otherwise have been certified for tax credits during the fiscal year, less the discount provided by law. If that's done, the credit would be disallowed and the bill would allow for refunds to taxpayers who had made contributions. The bill also extends the sunset date for the film production labor rebate certificates from January 1st, 2012 to January 1, 2018, and the bill would take effect 91st day.
I'd like to call up a panel of Vince Porter, Dean Devlin, and Steve Oster, and while they are coming up, Representative Reed, Representative Bentz, you have dealt extensively with this in your policy committee. Do you have any comments for the committee on how it reached us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Chris has done a good job of explaining the summary. The question that we spent time with in our committee was whether this was of value to the state, and our committee reached the conclusion that it was. Speaking for myself, and I think to a certain extent the rest of the committee, the question that remains it's really consistent with the process that we're engaging with all these credits is how it stacks up against the other credits. For myself, and Vince will not be surprised to hear me say this because I've said this to him for years, I think the most interesting thing is how this credit might help build an industry in Oregon to the extent that it can remove us from having to compete solely on price. It's one thing if the industry continues to depend on a credit to be viable. It's another thing if the credit can build that industry to the point that it can be self-sustaining and the credit can be lessened or ended over time. So I'll be interested to hear that testimony today. I hope that there is a good answer and a good story about how this industry is building and can be self-sustaining. We did make a change in our committee that Chris alluded to, allowing the legislature the option of essentially buying the credit. You'll recall, and I'm sure we'll return to this conversation on a variety of things, that a credit has a certain inefficiency when it's sold, or with a discount, sort of leakage questions. And the if economic conditions and the judgment of the legislature are such that it's attractive, the legislature with this amendment could transform the credit into a direct grant and avoid that inefficiency. So that's perhaps one way of summarizing things, and I'd be glad to have my co-chair cover anything I missed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. I don't think you missed much. I would build on the remarks a little, though, by pointing out one of the positive things of this particular tax credit is the fact that the media created is much more likely to be seen by many more people. So to the extent we can talk about Oregon in it, that's a very good thing and an additional value that the film media brings to the table. I would say, however, and just remarking about the Meeks cutoff film that was done out by Burns, that I'm not sure I want to see all these people stumbling through this dry, barren wasteland. We might want to call that Montana or something in the future. But it does bring some extra value. There's no doubt about it.
Good point.
Maybe not to Burns, but in the future. Burns was very happy for the projects, by the way. It brought a lot of money to the community, and my hope is people will want to go out and see that area, notwithstanding the lack of water and other things.
Well, we appreciate the work of both of you in the policy committee, and now we get our chance to review in this committee. So, gentlemen, thank you. And we have a number of people who have signed up to testify, so we're going to ask that you try to keep your comments to about 3 minutes each, in whatever order you prefer.
Okay. I'll go ahead and begin. Thank you. Co-chairs Bailey, Burdick, and Berger, members of the committee, my name is Vince Porter, and I'm executive director of the Oregon Film and Video Office. Earlier in the week, I submitted to the committee detailed answers relating to the questions you all have put together for evaluating all tax credits under review by this committee. And I would be happy to provide any more information that you may have in regards to those answers, and either today or in the future. But today I'd like to briefly report to you the level of success of the Oregon Production Investment Fund, as well as the Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate. I'm proud to say that these two programs have not just delivered on the expectations of the program, but actually overperformed. From 2007 to 2010, the total amount of direct spend in Oregon on OPIF and Greenlight qualified film and television projects has amounted to over $178 million. In 2011, we now know that this year will be the biggest year ever in Oregon, thanks to 4 live-action projects and 2 major animation projects. By the end of the year, we expect 2007 and through 2011, the spending numbers to exceed $275 million. In addition, the Greenlight program has brought in over $30 million of television commercial production. All of this has been accomplished while competing with over 40 states and all of the Canadian provinces with film incentive programs. In fact, if you were to rank our program with all the other states, Oregon would be in the lower third based on our conservative incentives. We've been able to have this success because we focused on recruiting projects that are the best fit for Oregon. Those projects, I believe, are best described as television series, mid to low budget independent films, and animation. And although we don't attract the big budget Hollywood films to Oregon with our incentives, we do attract the types of projects that hire and contract with a larger ratio of local cast, crew, and small businesses. We've also made great strides towards developing a stronger and more sufficient local industry. And today you'll hear that there are additional infrastructure investments being made by local businesses. You'll hear from business owners who have been able to leverage the contract work from these projects which strengthens their reputation and exposure internationally, ultimately bringing more work to Oregon. And you'll hear from those who have come to experience all the natural benefits our state brings to the creative industry and their commitment to do more work in our state. Finally, I'd like to briefly talk about the immense changes the motion picture industry is experiencing. Thanks to digital technologies coming online every year, the industry is in the middle of a titanic shift. These technologies are changing the way creative content is created, distributed, marketed, and even consumed. And as a result, the industry is less reliant on Los Angeles and New York than ever before. And I believe that's an opportunity for us. Because of our strong technology sector and a world-class creative community, we can be a leader in the brave new world of media. We can also use the projects that film in our state to spread the good word Oregon has to offer. In the past few months, we've seen several examples of what film and television projects can do for our state. In the month before the premiere of the television series Portlandia, over 200 national and international media outlets wrote about Oregon thanks to the show. Tomorrow, the feature film Meek's Cutoff opens in its theatrical run in theaters across the country. And since its world premiere in Venice last fall, there have been countless articles written about this compelling tale about Oregon's pioneer history. And one quick note about, we were really grateful that finally we have the opportunity to show the diversity of locations. So the lack of water, I felt, was a benefit for our marketing efforts. I can imagine these final
Mr.
months.
Mr. Porter, if you could summarize your comments.
Okay. I'll just make one brief comment about the amendment that was put forth about the financing mechanism. Despite the fact I read the amendment four times, I did miss one word that was improperly stated based on the intent of the bill, and that is coming with an additional amendment that I've spoken to Rep. Reed and mentioned to Rep. Benz, which was the purpose of the financing was to give the legislature the option at the beginning of every fiscal year. And as it's in the current bill, it says at the end, and we would appreciate it if that amendment change would be considered. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll try and read this quickly. Good morning. I want to thank the co-chairs and all the members for allowing me to speak today on behalf of the entertainment industry. My name is Dean Devlin, and for the last 20 years, I've been a film and television producer, writer, director, and financier. I'm most known for having made the film Stargate, Independence Day, The Patriot, among others. And I'm currently producing, directing, and financing a television series called Leverage for TNT here in Oregon. The pilot episode of our show was actually shot in Chicago. We chose to shoot there because of Illinois' aggressive 30% incentive program. Our pilot was going to be very expensive, and we could not afford to make it otherwise. When our show was picked up by the network, we shot the rest of the first season in Los Angeles. But quickly it became apparent to us that our show could no longer financially sustain itself shooting in California. With dwindling revenues from foreign sales, DVDs, and other ancillary markets, we knew we would be forced to move the show to another state that offered incentives. After an exhaustive study, we came to the decision that Vancouver, Canada would be the most advantageous for our production. And it was at that time that I received a call from then-Governor Ted Kulongoski, who called me and explained to me why Oregon would be a better place for our production. While on paper, Vancouver appeared to have nearly $2 million advantage between incentives and exchange rate, there were numerous other advantages to Oregon that I had not considered, such things as the enormously large talent pool, both in front of and behind the camera, convenient travel to and from Los Angeles, being in the same time zone as Los Angeles, city and state support from everything from location expenses to police and fire department cooperation were all very attractive to me. By the end of that conversation, he had convinced me. Everything he told me turned out not only to be true, but it turns out he had undersold the state. My experience here has been nothing short of spectacular. We've now shot two entire seasons of Leverage here, and we are currently in the midst of shooting our new season. Our production Leverage alone has brought in over $75 million in direct spend, 205,000 hours of labor, 471 full-time jobs per season, with an additional 417 local companies receiving money from our production. In addition, we spend roughly $350,000 a year on background talent, extras, every season that we shoot here. And this last December, I shot a new pilot for a TV series, which actually takes place in Portland, called The Brain Trust. And our plan is to begin shooting that series here in September as well. It is my fervent belief that there is an incredible opportunity here in Oregon to develop a thriving entertainment industry. Not unlike what happened to Vancouver, Canada in the late 70s and early 80s, Oregon is uniquely positioned for enormous growth. The huge local talent pool of artists, actors, painters, sculptors, musicians, designers, and builders is unmatched elsewhere in the country outside of Los Angeles and New York. So are the diverse architectural styles, the incredible variety of locations of cities, farms, beaches, mountains, and forests. And like Vancouver, Oregon is in the same time zone as Los Angeles, which has a huge financial impact on television productions. However, this opportunity is entirely dependent on the incentive program. Over the last several months, I've been part of a team exploring the idea of building a more permanent infrastructure for our industry here in the state. We've looked at several sites in different counties to build a state-of-the-art film and television studio. The Wapato Prison, for example, is a perfect place that could be turned into a facility quickly.
really? Could be.
That's thinking outside the box.
And with a true studio in place, we could further grow the entertainment industry here in the state and attract major productions to come here. But there's no point in building that infrastructure if there's not going to be enough business to support it. That's why the incentives are crucial. I mean, look, it's great that our production can spend roughly $30 million or so a year here on my television series. But I'm a film producer who often spends over $150 million on a single feature film. I mean, imagine the impact that could have on the state. But under the current incentive program, only a few productions a year eat up the entire benefit, therefore limiting production and limiting job creation. Please support these incentives, and please support the growth of these incentives. The opportunity for the state is tremendous. It just takes leadership. I'm committed to partnering with you on this to build a true entertainment industry here in Oregon now and in the future. Thank you for your time, and I am available to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Devlin. We're very grateful that you were able to make the trip to come testify in front of the committee and thanks for your investment.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Steve Oster, and well, I'm here today partly as a member of the Board of Directors of the Governor's Office of Film and Television. I'm also here today as a television producer who, for the first time after living in Oregon for 12 years, actually got to work at home. That's wholly due to the incentive program. While the folks at Alaska Airlines were not so excited to hear I wasn't going to do my weekly trip back and forth to Los Angeles or up to Vancouver, B.C., I was thrilled that after many years of conversations with the production team at NBC that I've had, that Vince has had, that the staff at the film office has had, they finally felt comfortable to bring one of their series pilots up here to Oregon. It's been a building process that's been going on for many years since the start of the incentives in 2005. It's meant double-digit increases in this industry since that time. And it's meant an ever-expanding crew base and infrastructure. To take the wind out of those sails at this point would be a great shame and I think a great financial detriment to the state. During the 2 months that the NBC project that I worked on was here in Oregon, we had a direct local spend of nearly $5 million. $2.5 million of that was payroll for primarily local crew members and cast. Another $2 million went to local businesses, including expenditures like 700 room nights at local hotels, $140,000 in building supplies, $125,000 at local clothing retailers, and nearly $200,000 that went to two Oregon visual effects houses, who beat out several of the large Big Gorilla visual effects houses down in Los Angeles. And while their demo reels that came from those Oregon companies were equally as impressive of what we saw out of the long-standing relationship that NBC has with visual effects houses in Los Angeles, what tipped the scales in the favor of the Oregon companies was the incentive program. That's just the direct spend. As many of you know, the indirect impact, the ripple-out effect, if you will, is estimated at 2 to 3 times that, because infusing that kind of cash in a very short amount of time helps bolster the growth of those local companies. And again, I want to point out that a lot of this, and I would say the lion's share of this money, goes to small and medium-sized businesses. The executives at NBC were thrilled with their experience on the pilot. If they pick it up to series, they would love to bring 22 episodes of it a year up to Oregon, but that won't happen without an incentive program. Before the incentives were introduced, $6 million a year or so was about what Oregon was seeing in terms of production that was coming into the state. As Vince just mentioned, we're looking at a year this year that's nearly $100 million. So with your support, we can continue that trajectory of exponential growth and the jobs that come with it. Thanks for your support.
Thank you. Right at 3 minutes. Very well done.
Lots of rehearsal.
Questions for this panel? Coach Roberta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you may not be the panel to answer this question, but as a state, it's always advantageous to hitch your wagon to a rising star, as they say. How's the industry doing in this environment? Are we, I mean, you produce, as you explained, TV series type things, films. Is the industry doing well?
The industry is shifting, and the traditional models of revenue are evaporating. New models are opening up. DVDs are almost vanishing, but now people are buying things on iTunes and on Amazon and iPads. So there's a transition happening, and during this transition, there's an enormous amount of cost-cutting happening, especially on scripted entertainment. Which is why there's been a flood of productions leaving Los Angeles, chasing incentives. I'm one of them. So costs have to come down, but the amount of productions is increasing. There's more channels than ever to produce entertainment for. So in that area, there's a lot of growth. Channels like AMC and TNT and TBS, which in the past maybe had one or two original programming, now want to go full programming all week long. So there's a lot of growth happening, but it's in a tighter economy. So that's part of the reason why I think there's such an amazing opportunity here. And as Vin said, even though it's not anywhere near the most aggressive amount of money that's being offered to productions, the balance of that and all the other things that are attractive to the state really makes this unique. I mean, when I originally set out to do this, I was just looking at bottom line numbers. You know, where am I going to get the most amount of money? And what I found is I'm actually getting more here, though only less than half of that is actually coming from the state. The rest is all the other benefits of being here. And that addresses to what you were saying. The more that's exposed and the more that grows, the more important that's going to become to outside producers.
Thank you.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the work and especially the praise for Oregon and Oregon's capacity to provide for the kinds of productions you need. It sounds like part of what you're saying is that not only did you get some incentives here, but the production costs were lower for a whole variety of reasons that I think you enumerated at least some of. Can you give us some sense of what you think the capacities are for growth in a state like Oregon, given the kind of, and that may be for any of the three of you, in a state like Oregon? We've talked, I think Mr. Oster talked about going from $6 million of total production to over $100 million from 2005. What sort of growth rate can we expect in the future, all else being equal? Does it become self-sustaining at some point?
Well, let me answer the first part of that, which is that I think a very good example is Vancouver, B.C. I believe that right now they have about $1.3 billion in production a year. And as an outside producer, when I look at the two places, I'd rather be here. I think most of the places going to Canada would rather be here if it made more sense to be here, if they could justify it. One of the big advantages that Vancouver has is they have infrastructure. They have real big studios, and they're many crews deep. Right now, Oregon is about 4 crews deep. Used to be 1 crew deep when I started here. I believe that very quickly this could be competitive. I mean, the growth, I think it could happen in a relatively short amount of time. Unlike other industries, we set up shop fast. You know, we're like a circus. The tent goes up very quickly. So I believe that the amount of growth that could happen in the state is unlimited, because it is really a perfect place for production.
Sam Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of the critics of the film credit have argued that it is like a circus that comes and it goes, and there's not the infrastructure that there is with other industries. So I'm very intrigued by your comments about actually starting some infrastructure here in Oregon. I'd like you to elaborate on that. And also share with us how you think that will change the industry here in Oregon.
Forgive me for constantly going back to Vancouver, but in a way, it's a model for me in that Stephen Cannell went up there with his television shows in the late 70s, and he built studios, and things grew from there. I'd like to do the same thing. I see that as a model for myself. I'm being very selfish in the moment, so forgive me. But I have had such a good experience here on so many levels, as we were just talking about, that I would like to do all my productions here as long as it fit creatively, you know, with the directors I work with and the stories I'm making. But aside from the incentive, which is crucial, don't get me wrong, but to have permanent infrastructure, sound stages, state-of-the-art pipes. When I mean pipes, I mean digital connections between here and Los Angeles. If that existed, what would happen is you'd see a community grow around it. You would end up with housing there. You would end up with a whole new banking industry to support the entertainment industry. I mean, again, forgive me for just giving small examples, but. How partially I finance my show is through foreign sales, and I have to take a loan against those foreign sales, and part of it is the tax credit, and I take a loan against that tax credit. Well, at the time I first set up here, there wasn't a single bank that was equipped to do that here in Oregon, so to fund all these things, I had to go out of the state. As this grows, these associated industries will all grow, and I think that the more that we could have a bricks-and-mortar presence, the more those industries will grow around it. Right now, there are fantastic little boutique shops all around Oregon in different counties. If that can be corralled together in a more cohesive way, it would benefit them, but it would also benefit our industry. We wouldn't be running around trying to figure out where everything is. It would all be in these groups. And I just see that potential. And mostly, it's because of the talent. It's the humans. You know, so often when we talk about industries, it's about the machines you buy. And there are amazing humans in this state. I mean, unbelievable. When I set up our show, the network insisted that I budget to fly out 4 actors from Los Angeles on every single episode. We average 1. And there's oftentimes we don't fly anyone out. There's so much talent here. And that's just actors, but painters, designers, construction people. I know that sounds like a strange thing to say, but, you know, when you build a set, it has to look like a real house that's been lived in for 30 years. That's a unique skill, that we have artists here who can build those sets and paint them and design them. That's unusual. When I went to Illinois to do the pilot, while it was a 30% rebate we were getting, which was tremendous, I had to fly in so many people to work on the show that it mitigated that. That at the end of the day, I do better here because of the humans. And that's what that's the number one thing to me is there are amazing humans here. Also, I think that you guys have done a much better job of setting up the tax credit. You know, I think when you look around the country, it's been done well in some places and it's been done really poorly in others. I think you guys have done an amazing job in how it's set up here. So it's efficient for the state, but it's really efficient for us. And it makes it much better for planning. So I just think that there's a lot of things that are attractive beyond just what technology we bring here. Now, flipping to the other side of that, what Vince said, the technology has gotten easier and less expensive. So our ability to set up infrastructure is cheaper and faster. So in the past, if I were, for instance, if I set up a digital effects company, I'd like to do here, in the past that would have been a $60, $70 million investment on my part. Now, to set it up, I could do it, you know, for under $10 million and then really put that money into hiring artists. So we can get more people employed, get up faster, and that's due to technology.
May I, Co-Chair Burdick, make one comment about the infrastructure? I think one thing, and I know Dean agrees with this, I think the key to infrastructure investment is going to be smart infrastructure investment. We've seen other states make these palaces of big, open, empty spaces, and sometimes they become so cost prohibitive that it becomes not an advantage. I think Dean's interest, and I think several other people across the state, are about making smart infrastructure investments and also investments that would be relevant to the future. I'm a big believer that this future of this industry is going to be as much about moving data around the world as it is going to be about a big, fancy open space. And I think that's certainly part of their plan, and I think something we would be really interested, because I think creating that kind of infrastructure also allows us to connect up with various businesses across the state as well.
Representative Brewer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a two-part question. One of the things that we're tasked with in weighing a tax credit is the but-for conversation. So my two questions, and it has to do with but-for this credit existing. Without the credit, where would the industry's optimum location be for concentration of efforts? And then with the credit available from various states, where is the optimum location for concentration of this industry?
Can I make one quick co-chairs? And Representative Brewer, I think traditionally it's been in New York and Los Angeles, with the but-for argument. I would think, though, now I would stack us up against just about any other state based on the level of talent. It's quite interesting, since I've been in this position for 3 years, to learn how many people actually live in this state that go and travel down and work in Los Angeles. And it seems every year we get calls into our office about people that have done that in Ashland and Bend and all over the state. And what they're interested in now is, not making that commute. And I think as we're aggregating that talent, we're going to be even more attractive. And I think we can compete. And I think that is evident by the fact that when we are compared as far as the dollars that we offer to other states, that we aren't the best, and yet still people are coming. And in fact, we are getting more inquiries than what we can currently facilitate.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you.
And for the committee, we do have an enormous amount of testimony still to get through.
This is a quick one. Several of you have mentioned pipes and ability to move data around. I don't need it today, and it's not necessarily germane to the bill, but it'd be very helpful for me personally, at least, to know what you mean by that and what we have to do in order to develop the capacity that, based on what you said, sounds like we don't have yet. And again, that's not necessarily an answer today, but I'd like to know that.
Co-chairs, Representative Barnhart, I actually think, it's really interesting getting into the amount. I think it's less about what we need to do and as opposed to what we need to aggregate. It's pretty incredible to learn just how much fiber is in our state. And
there's a lot of dark fiber in Oregon.
It's incredible. Yeah. And I think it's really about just learning that more. Certainly up in the Portland area, there's been a lot of discussion. Down in the Eugene area, there's some real opportunities. But the mere fact that the main web line, I don't know what the proper term is, coming in from Asia, lands in the Pittock building in downtown Portland, is an enormous opportunity. There's actually a person working for Warner Brothers Studio in the Pittock building. He moved up here about a year ago, that is using that advantage to move up here with his wife, who got a job up here and is working for Warner Brothers Studios. I'd like to see that grow, and I think it's really just about accessing what's available and figuring out how we can, for lack of a pun, leverage that asset.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're reaching your limit, Vince. Senator Haas.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment on the part about I didn't know that I could be helpful, but on the comment about new construction making a house look like it's been lived in for 30 years, my family could help with that.
Keep that in mind.
You got experience in the category.
Thank you, gentlemen. I have one final question I'd like to ask you about certainty. It sounds like, from what I hear you saying, Mr. Devlin, that we have incentives that put us over the top with the other assets that we have in this state, and that that may lead to, I think in your words, a permanent installation at some point. How important is certainty around those incentives to your industry as you do that planning and look towards perhaps some sort of permanent installation?
It's crucial. I mean, if you build Disneyland, you need to know the tourists are coming. And currently, there's a limit to how much production is going to be here. If we know that production is going to grow, then we know there's going to be customers, and it makes sense to build. I mean, I'm kind of moving forward regardless because I need it for myself. But if I were to create something that would be really helpful to the industry beyond my own personal needs, we'd need to know that many productions could be using the facilities, that there's many post-production houses that could be working. It's a bit of a trickle up theory in a way. This has to go from the ground up, and to do that, there has to be an incentive for these productions to show up. I can tell you about a film I was going to do a few months ago, and I was lobbying very heavily to bring it here. But when we looked at how much was going to go out in incentive, it was going to be spent. So I couldn't bring the film here. So if these caps can get larger, more productions, and literally as high as those caps go is as high as productions will come. An advantage that you have in the way your incentive is structured is you don't actually pay that incentive until after we've spent our money here. So as far as the efficiency of that, you're set up very well. We don't get that money in advance, and then we come or we don't come, or you're not paying for our facility before it's set up. It's after we've spent the money that we receive these incentives. So in that regard, you have a bit of a leverage to make sure that productions come. But I can just tell you, as a person who's constantly searching, part of the opportunity now is, and again, this is my very biased opinion, so take that for what it is, but in the few states that are cutting back on their incentive, they're losing productions, and those productions are looking for a place to go. And it is my opinion that in most of those places they're cutting back, it's from political reasons and not practical reasons, because most of the data shows that those productions, those incentives were extremely successful. But they're looking for homes. All those productions are looking for homes. And I get calls all the time saying, is Oregon right for us? You know, does it rain too much? You know, I get all these conversations.
Yes.
And
actually,
not saying something. It doesn't. If you actually look it up, you have the same rainfall as Manhattan, and there's never been a problem shooting in New York. You have more days of precipitation. Precipitation is very good for filmmaking because that's like hanging a silk over the sun, and it makes people's faces look very beautiful. So it's not a problem.
Who knew?
It's really just a problem of capacity.
Bring on
Can you
rain.
Come back every week and tell us how beautiful we are?
Mr. Craig, if I may, just in terms of that questions of certainty, I'm in a situation with this project right now where NBC will decide what their next fall series looked like come May 16th. They're already asking that question. Is there going to be an incentive if they commit to bringing that pilot or that series up here? Is there going to be an incentive? And right now, it's difficult to give them that firm answer. Without that answer, I can tell you, while the show takes place in Portland, Oregon, we'll be shooting in Vancouver, British Columbia. That's just the way it pencils out. So the certainty factor is huge, particularly as it applies to television series.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
And to those who are coming up next, I apologize that we are time constrained. I think this was a good panel to get through. I will be more vigilant about enforcing the 3 minutes and bonus points and extra credit for those that come in under that. So with that, I'd like to call up Gary Kaut and Bruce Lawson. Gretchen Miller and Ray DiCarlo are on deck.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming, I might simply ask that the people who've provided us with the information about the incentives from various states might also bring us the one from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yes,
that would be very helpful for the committee. Thank you, Representative.
Please.
Good morning, co-chairs Burdick, Bailey, and Berger, and members of the committee. My name is Gary Kaut, and I am an independent producer and the executive director of Southern Oregon Film and Television. My comments are almost exactly 3 minutes, but I need a couple extra seconds, if you will permit me, to just make sure everybody is aware that I'm up from Southern Oregon, from the Ashland area, and the things I will talk about will show that this is a statewide program, that it does benefit areas other than a lot of my colleagues behind me in the north of the state. I'd like to begin my testimony today by reading parts of a letter written by a couple colleagues in Southern Oregon. Dear members of the Joint Committee on Tax Credits, primarily because of the OPIF program, we first came to Southern Oregon in 2007 to shoot the baseball comedy Calvin Marshall, starring Steve Zahn. The rebate we received enabled us to achieve our budget of $1.8 million, almost all of which was spent entirely in Medford and Ashland. We had such a wonderful experience shooting in Southern Oregon that we left Los Angeles in 2010 and moved back to Ashland full-time to run our new production company, Joma Films. OPIF is vital to our company's ability to shoot feature films here in Oregon, including our next project, Bad Vintage, that is set to shoot this summer. Without this incentive, it is unlikely that we can continue to make films in Oregon, as our investors will want to explore a state with incentives. Thanks for consideration in this regard. Sincerely, Ann Lundgren, producer, Gary Lundgren, writer-director. And now I'd like to show the committee a list that Southern Oregon Film and Television uses as part of our marketing and networking efforts. It is a comprehensive but not complete list of companies that all saw an economic benefit, be it in the form of rentals, purchases, lodgings, meals, you name it, from several independent films shot in Southern Oregon starting back in 2005, all of which were made possible in part by the OPIF and Greenlight Labor programs. And this has been submitted as evidence in a smaller form. And I'd like to end my testimony by telling you how the most recent production came to be in Southern Oregon. The director is a local businessman living in Ashland. He raised the money from an investors group in Los Angeles who wanted to make the movie down there, of course. The budget was only $100,000, and they felt the money would go further down there, especially since cast and crew wouldn't have to travel. The director came to me and asked how we could make it work in Southern Oregon. I told him that we have developed a capable crew base, thanks largely to the work made possible by the incentives, and could hire an all-local crew. I told him we have some of the best actors in the country right here in the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And last but not least, by being a part of the IOPIF program, the first actually to do so in Southern Oregon, we'd have funds that we could use to increase our budget and make a better film. The financiers were convinced, and indeed we did those things. Hired an all-Oregon and mostly Southern Oregon crew, and 16 of our 20 roles, all local, were filled by actors from the Shakespeare Festival. The movie has finished shooting, and we will be releasing it in early 2012. I submit these as excellent examples of what my friend and colleague Vince Porter said in his statement, that the rebate attracts the types of projects that hire and contract with a larger ratio of local cast, crew, and small businesses, and that they are developing a stronger and more sufficient local industry with additional infrastructure investments being made by local businesses. I urge you to support House Bill 2167, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kapp. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you. I'm speaking on behalf of Native Oregonians who are making an effort in building the infrastructure here. My name is Bruce Lawson. I have 30 years' experience in filmmaking, and I'm a key grip. Growing up in Portland and graduating from the University of Oregon, I chose to make my living and raise my family right here in my home state rather than migrate to another state. In 1996, my brother Brent and I formed BLT Productions. We invested in a full feature grip package, but the industry slowed from 1999 until 2005. And then Oregon introduced an incentive, and things turned around. Increased growth and business in 2006 enabled BLT to purchase both a 48 and a 35-foot trailer to provide grip support for any project ranging from commercials to major motion pictures. We were soon joined by a longtime coworker and friend, Mark Halston, another Native Oregonian, in the effort to provide locally owned film support equipment. Through Mark's purchase of two semi-tractors, we've been able to pull our trailers and gear throughout not only the state of Oregon, but across the country when a state with a more aggressive incentive program would lure a production away from Oregon. We recently have joined forces again to form Elite Camera Cars. This time, Mark Halston, my brothers Brian and Brent Lawson, and I have joined together in an effort to provide a much-needed service in the form of an Oregon-based professional camera car company. We're committed to creating a safe and viable environment for world-class filmmakers. We at BLT Productions and Elite Camera Cars believe strongly in making an investment in Oregon's future. But we're not alone in this vision, and we are joined by many other local film professionals, including Doug Boss of Pacific Grip and Lighting, Joel Sternkorb and Greg Schmidt of Gearhead Grip and Electric, Michael Kerner of Kerner Cameras, Don and Patsy Williams of Northwest Craft Services, Eric Solmanson, SST Transportation, and Bruce Fleskus and Scott Walters of S&S Power. All of us share the same vision that by investing locally, we can build a viable infrastructure for film in Oregon. Our investments and commitment to growth are made possible due to the increased projects locally filmed in Oregon, and these projects come here due to the quality crew, abundant locations, and the incentive that the state provides. On a recent project for NBC titled Grimm, I had 14 full-time employees working just in the grip department alone. We wrapped that project on Friday, April 8th, and on Tuesday, April 12th, I began prep for Gone, which I'm doing right now as I sit here, a lakeshore feature that will employ myself and, again, at least 14 other grips through the third week of June. These 14 grips represent 14 Oregon families. Now figure in the electric department, art department, wardrobe, construction, and et cetera. I hope you can see that this means a lot for all of us and our families who choose to live here and make our living at home in Oregon. I encourage you to do all you can to ensure the continued success of our great film industry here in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Coach Berger.
I will be very brief. If you were working full-time, what is the sort of income range of a key grip?
Depending on the budget of the film, I would say $31 an hour.
Okay, that helps me. Thank you.
I'm
not sure what a key grip does, but your pictures help a lot.
I'd be happy to tell
that's
you sometime
okay.
when
that's
I have
okay.
a few
minutes. We have a lot of other people.
Thank you.
I know we're pressed for time, but I asked permission to speak on behalf of Doug Boss, who wanted to be here this morning, just briefly.
If you could keep it very brief.
Very brief. I just want to make one point. He owns Pacific Grip and Lighting. He's so busy. He wanted to be here today, but he's got a beehive going on at his place because we're prepping for Gone. I just want to briefly read right here from what he wrote, that in 2006 he bought his first 48-foot electric trailer, had it built locally for $60,000, purchased distribution electric cable from ATI, a company in Bend, Oregon, and in the last 2 years they spent approximately $100,000 just with that company. They've increased their complex. They plan on building another. They built another trailer for $60,000. They're getting a bid for another 48-foot trailer with the increased business for $75,000, and will spend more money. Bless you. With ATI in Bend, hopefully another $30,000, and they've spent another $40,000. So that's $170,000 potential just with that one company. So he's really wanted to be here today, but he's just slammed. So thank you very much.
Representative Barnhart.
What's your sense of the kind of capacity growth that the industry is capable of in Oregon without hitting huge bottlenecks that slow things down? I mean, other people are asking for an increase in this in this support system. And they're saying that they'd like to do a lot more stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
How much more stuff can we do without running into bottlenecks in your area of expertise?
It's unlimited.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Vaughn.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Lawson, I've always believed that we grow excellent people here in Oregon, and I just want to thank you for making your business here at home. When we need more people to do that instead of going off to the big city and leaving us behind. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Brewer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to clarify your testimony. You started a production company with your brother in 96. Mm-hmm. And when the credit was then enacted, you had a noticeable uptick in your business. At that point, how many employees before the credit did you hire, and then how many employees after the credit do you now hire? Or what was your high range with the credit?
Well, I'm not able to hire directly. I don't hire employees. But when I get a show, depending on the budget and the amount of the need, the larger the show, the more employees I can have. I'll have a best boy, key grip, best boy, dolly grip, and two or three grips. Then if it's a large enough show, there's a rigging crew as well, full-time or maybe part-time. But in the case of Grimm, which we just had, we had a full-time rigging crew as well. So that's another key grip, best boy rigging, and two to three company grips as well. So then when you add that, you know, electric department's going to equal the same. So in between, when we don't have projects like Leverage or Grimm or Gone coming in, we all fight. There's a huge amount of crew, and this is what happened between 99 and 2005. And there's only a few jobs to go around with the local commercials or infomercials or the occasional commercial that may come in from out of state. Everybody's fighting for that, and you lose a lot of crew base and a lot of talent base because you can't keep everybody alive. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain amount of people that always maybe get the calls, so it's really important to try and keep that job circulating through everyone. So I've never seen it like it. This year right now, it has the best potential in the 30 years I've been doing this. Mm-hmm. It would be a shame to kill this momentum.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up Gretchen Miller and Ray DiCarlo, Michael Aronson, and Janet McIntyre on deck.
Chair Burdick, Chair Bailey, Chair Berger, and members of the committee, my name is Gretchen Miller, and I'm here in support of HB 2167. I'm the co-owner of Hive Effects, a visual effects and animation company based in Portland. I would like to share the story of two OPIF-related projects that directly benefited our company and, more importantly, added value to our business by elevating the level of work to attract more out-of-town clients. In addition, these projects expanded the skill set of our employees and gave them valuable experience on high-end productions. In this type of business, all we really have to show for is our reel. A year ago, our reel was adequate. We had some local commercials and some projects when we were based in California. Last year, because of OPIF and the assistance of the Oregon Film Office, we were given the opportunity to bid on an NBC pilot called A Walk in My Shoes. We were awarded the work and given the opportunity to show outside production companies that they don't have to go to LA for high-quality work. As you can guess, we were able to add these shots to our reel, which in turn led us to be considered for the latest NBC pilot, Grimm. Again, with the support of the Oregon Film Office, we were given the opportunity to provide a test to NBC to show that they could trust a Portland-based company to do visual effects. Now we are in the middle of 25 visual effects shots for the Grimm pilot. Because of this, we've been able to purchase more computers and hire 8 additional employees. All of this would not have been possible without the continuation of the OPIF programs. Once we complete Grimm, we can expand our client base and share a reel that has gone from adequate to excellent. I urge you all to support House Bill 2167. This is a very exciting time to be a part of a thriving community of media professionals, and with your support, it can only get better.
Thank you. Thanks. Very succinct.
Joint Committee co-chairs. My name is Ray DiCarlo. I'm a co-owner and founder of a company called Bent Image Lab. We do animation and visual effects. I wanted to address a couple things that were a couple questions that were actually asked. You were asking how, you know, much is too much, like are we going to grow too fast and not be able to keep up with the work. One of the things I can say is that recruiting people to come to Oregon who know techniques or know things that we can teach people in Oregon is very easy. People love the state. If they're jobs, you can get, if you have a part of the industry that you're not doing right now, you can get somebody to come help teach it, and then you end up with 10 people in a very short amount of time who know how to do that part of the industry. So the ability to grow, I think, is, as people have said, pretty unlimited.
For myself, I came here in, about 25 years ago and spent my first 5 years gone from the state 10 months a year to work on films out of Oregon because there was really no work here. And when we decided to have kids, I decided, well, I didn't want to leave the state so much, so I kind of migrated into animation. And it turns out that Oregon, unofficially, per capita, has more animators than any place but Bristol, England. And it just was it's like grunge music started in Seattle. Animators all started working with animators in town, so there's a lot of animators. One of the things that has happened over the last few years, we basically started the company after 9/11 when there was the animators and creative people were having to leave town. They were taking jobs as taxi drivers and janitors, which is totally great, but they're world-class animators. So we thought, well, let's see if we can go find some work and keep these people working. And so really that's what we did. And we found that we could compete on a worldwide basis. Then really in the last, I'd say before the incentive started, we started finding that we were having to compete against like the Canadian incentives. And so people would literally call and say, we really like you creatively, we like you guys better, but we can do it for this much in Canada. And so most of the time we've had to say, okay, either we can't take the job. In my little letter here, I talk about a series that we had to turn down because we couldn't even figure out how to lose a little bit of money and keep people working. Whereas since the incentives come, we've been able to take, we're doing a special right now that we put 80 more people on over the next 4 or 5 months, basically being able to match what it would have cost them to do up in Canada. So as a one-to-one relationship, the incentive has helped us bring that work to town. And because it's a series, the thing that happens with the entire industry is now you have relationships with content work. Once you get that, the next piece of content they're looking at, they look to come to you, and you can then start to amortize all those costs of building your infrastructure over a few years, and eventually you can do it, you know, stand on your own, and you don't need the incentives anymore. So that's really kind of how to grow the industry. I had a few notes here that are not on what I was talking about here, and basically I said small businessmen started from scratch. We basically paid for everything along the way. If I was the state of Oregon and I was looking at this plan and I was looking how to grow my business, I would definitely keep this incentive in for the next 6 years. Ironically enough, Gretchen and her partner actually were working with our company, left and started their own company. So now you have two companies that have grown out of one, you know, start in Oregon. The last thing I'll say is that I also watched Meeks Crossing. I had no idea there were salt flats in Oregon, so I'm going to go out and see them. So I think that just showing the state, even to people who have been here for 25 years, is important. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. DiCarlo, I want to say thank you for all of the jobs you provide right in the heart of my district. I had a fun time visiting your facility, so thanks for that.
Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? All right. Appreciate it. Michael Aronson and Janet McIntyre, and I think I'll also call up Steve Besaw at the same time. Please go ahead.
Sure. Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Mike Aronson. I'm a professor of film and media studies at the University of Oregon. And I'm here today as the associate director of the university's undergraduate program in cinema studies. So basically, I'm in the excellent human business, right?
the amazing human, I believe, was.
I'm sorry. Thank you. The cinema studies program is one of the university's newest. It became official with the State Board of Education's approval last January. It's also one of the fastest growing in the university's history, with 250 majors currently. And to be honest, we expect to probably double that size within the year. Our students basically are trained in the history, theory, and production of cinema, and basically what we see is our students becoming the future that Vince and Mr. Devlin talked about. Ideally, when they leave, they're going to come out with the skills to work in the media industry in the 21st century. And ideally, obviously, those jobs would be in Oregon for our citizens who are trained in Oregon. We're too young, really, to give you any kind of job placement numbers, but the one thing I want to talk about is internships, because the media industry is really, you know, you need experience to get experience, and that's true for a lot of businesses, particularly today, but it's always been true for the media industry. And internships, when the risks are low on both sides, are really a crucial component of the ways our students professionalize themselves. And the kinds of possibilities they're getting with major productions as a result of the incentive program, I currently have students working on Mr. Devlin's series on Leverage, really give them the kind of opportunity to then, once they graduate, go out and get jobs of the kinds that we're talking about here, kind of high-paying jobs of the future. The university and the state, I think, made a really smart investment in approving the cinema studies program at a time when, obviously, making decisions that have implications are really critical. And I think that the incentive program tied with this program at the university really really speaks well to the potential future of Oregon in the media industry. Thanks.
Co-Chair Burdick Bailey and Berger. I'm Janet McIntyre. I'm here in support of House Bill 2167. I've never done this before, so it's kind of exciting. For the past year, I've served as the academic dean.
I'm sorry,
dean.
If you could just lean back just a little bit from the microphone, it won't distort as much. Thank you.
For the past year, I've served as the academic dean at the Mount Hood Community College in Integrated Media and Performing Arts. And for 5 years prior, I was the department chair of the Digital Film Program and Visual Effects Program at the Art Institute of Portland. In both of those roles, I've been able to witness firsthand the tremendous benefits of the tax incentive program. In fact, I was there prior to the tax incentive program, so saw that change. The internships is an integral part to a student's education, and it's critical that they experience a professional opportunity, which they have been able to do largely, I believe, because of the incentive program and the opportunities made possible, which includes internships that I was able to secure with Leverage, all seasons 2, 3, and 4, Extraordinary Measures, Portlandia, Twilight, and Coraline. And I think as evidence of the importance of those internships, we have right here one of my former students, Jose Bihar, who is now Vice President in Business Development for Electric Entertainment. And it seems like it was just yesterday that he was sitting in my office struggling with how am I going to take these classes and do all the work that I want to do for my internship, which was far more exciting to him at that time, which is an important aspect, too, because these internships will excite and motivate a student oftentimes to complete their degree. Due to the influx of the film productions here statewide, there's also been opportunities for entry-level jobs that were not available to students before, to graduates. I mean, for Coraline alone, I worked with the 2D supervisor, Steve Emerson, at Leica to ensure that the students were receiving the technical skills that would make them competitive for those jobs in post-production. And due to that, 32 Art Institute grads were employed in both the post-production facility and the production facility. So just to make this quick, to wrap up, the importance of education now has become twofold. Our graduates are facing really tough
competitive economic times. So not only do we have to provide them with a affordable and rigorous education, but we have to give them career opportunities by presenting them with those internships and professional relationships, which I believe is a result of these tax incentive programs as far as the programs that I oversee. So I think this program helps us accomplish that mission in education. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bisa.
Good morning, co-chairs and committee members. Before I get started, I did bring a poster board here showing different aspects of the TV show Leverage. It shows their building infrastructure, where they film, where they set up sets. Also, small businesses that have benefited from all the money that they've spent, materials, and actual sets that they've built to look like real homes and stuff like that. And even in a blizzard on top of Mount Hood during the snow that we had. So to get started, I'm here to support House Bill 2167. My name is Steve Bisaw. I own 52nd Avenue Hardware and Building Supply, a small family business serving the Portland area for the last 40 years. I would like to start by saying that the film and television industry has saved our family business, really has. Currently, we are supplying materials from the lumber and the plywood to the glue and the nails that hold it all together. The television series that we are now in progress are Leverage and the feature film Gone. We just finished the NBC television series Grimm, pilot series Grimm. We also provided materials for the films Twilight, Extraordinary Measures, starring Harrison Ford. Both of these movies were filmed in Oregon. As you know, the building industry has suffered dramatically over the years. And without the television and film industry, we would be out of business.
And Mr. Bisa, I apologize for interrupting you. We have a copy of your written testimony here as well, which we will read through. So in order to get the last few folks in, if you could summarize your testimony, that would be great.
One of the biggest points I want to make is it's just not us that they're buying building materials from. It's from all my vendors that are here in Oregon. International Wood Products, who supplied a written testimony. Lumber Products in Tualatin, who supplied a written testimony. Emerson Hardwoods in Portland. Valley Roofing Mill in Salem. Oregon Pacific in Wilsonville. Weatherly Lumber in Eugene. Cascade Wholesale in Hillsboro. We had to lay off two employees last fall. We have now since hired them back, because we're so busy, we're slammed, like Bruce Laws was saying. They're in dire need of everything right now. They're really, really busy, and it's really helped us tremendously.
Thank you, and thank you for making the drive down. Thank you to this panel. And last, I'd like to call up Justin Habel and Lana Vinker. The committee will go right up to the edge here of the committee time. Is there anybody else who cannot come back on Tuesday, who's not regularly in the building, that would like to testify? Okay.
Honorable co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Justin Habel, and like Bruce Lawson and so many before me, I am an Oregonian who's chosen to stay here and do business in Oregon rather than relocate to L.A. or New York. My opportunity cost is my quality of life, and so I've chosen to stay here. I'm the owner of Q6 Model and Artist Management in Portland, and we represent actors and models. I've owned my business for 23 years and have represented literally hundreds of local actors and models over that time. And our sole source of revenue as a business is the commission that we take from the talent when they work on a film, a television commercial or print project, and this is our only source of revenue. Consequently, when there's more production in Oregon, we'll have more opportunities to generate income for our talent, which in turn creates more revenue for my business, and that's why I'm asking for your support for House Bill 2167, which allows Oregon to compete more effectively with other states in drawing production to our communities statewide. During my 23 years of being an agent in Oregon, I've witnessed both the boom and the bust years in the production community. In the mid-90s, Oregon benefited from two television series filming here concurrently, Nowhere Man and Under Suspicion. We also saw a huge uptick in movie production, primarily television movie production, and it was a good time in our industry. In the late 90s and into the early 2000s, the industry absolutely died in Oregon thanks to a strong dollar driving work up to Canada. As you've heard so much, Vancouver, B.C. has been like the scourge of our industry here in Oregon for years. The exchange rate was so favorable to producers that many took their work up north and saved a ton of money in doing so. Nationwide, the industry suffered. Canada benefited tremendously for many years, Toronto, Calgary, Winnipeg. Unfortunately, in 2001, the amount of production in Oregon had dwindled down to barely a trickle, and I had to look at my bottom line. There was barely anything being produced here, so I decided to disband the entire acting division of 220 actors and only have a models division. And it was quite a blow to the community, as we had built up a division of actors stronger than any in the Pacific Northwest. And it was a clear sign to all that something had changed, and it really drummed up the fear in everybody in the industry, and I took a lot of heat for it. But it's a business, and I could no longer devote an additional salary to a division that was producing so little income. And it was the start of some lean years in the production community. Many crew members had to either relocate to Vancouver,
BC. I'm sorry, Mr. Hagel, if you could summarize your comments, that would be great.
You betcha. So people were going where the work was, and they were leaving the community, and it was just a very, very hard decision. It was like disbanding a family of actors and sending them off into the unknown. And in the back of my mind, I always carried the hope that one day I'd be able to reopen the division again. And these incentives have made it possible for me to reopen my acting division, which I did in the fall of 2009. Part of the draw to Oregon is and always will be its different landscapes. And from Portland, which is the community's epicenter, we're never more than 3 hours away from desert, mountains, coastline, or urban bustle. The diversity in the landscape makes it ideal for episodic television, which can vary in location from episode to episode. And an episodic television series like Leverage, which films in Oregon here, can produce roughly 18 to 22 episodes in a season. They cast numerous roles, and it creates hundreds of opportunities for my actors in a season. And it's all about the opportunities. We just want the opportunities.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Ms. Meeker.
Co-chairs Burdick, Bailey, and Berger, and members of the committee. I'm here to talk to you today about some of the benefits of film incentives that are not reflected in the numbers provided by the film office, but which demonstrate the economic ripples of our investment program. My name is Lana Vinker. I'm the owner of Lana Vinker Casting, which was established in Portland in 1999. And a few of the things I wanted to mention was, one, I am one of only two or three U.S.-based casting directors to have been inducted into the International Casting Directors Network, which meets yearly in Berlin. Thanks to the high-profile projects that I've cast here in Oregon. This has given my company an international profile, so now I'm looking to add new services to attract business from around the world. In fact, I'm in the beginning stages of developing a feature film by a local screenwriter that will require an international cast. I've already engaged a local professional script analyst to help polish the script and a designer to craft new branding for my company that will reflect our expanded services. Secondly, in the years since we cast Twilight in Oregon, I have earned income from Twilight speaking engagements, appearances, conventions, and workshops. And finally, I hosted last February an acting and stunts boot camp in anticipation of the needs of Leverage. That weekend workshop attracted over 200 attendees, bumping the Super Bowl off the front page of the Oregonian by the next morning. I engaged 14 instructors, a catering company, an event space from the University of Oregon, providing employment for IT experts, event coordinators, and security guards. You may also know that Leverage itself did a convention last June, which over 500 people attended, with more than 900 at the closing ceremonies. Fans came in from around the world to stay in hotels, eat in restaurants, and spend money in local businesses. And it was so successful that they're doing another one this June. So income sources such as these are not reflected in the numbers that you see in the film and television payroll reports. But when I account for all the work that my company generated in 2010 from casting and from these related activities, our revenues were 229% higher with OPIF than they would have been without it. If the program goes away, so will the revenue possibilities. As it stands now, OPIF funds only keep my company busy about 6 to 9 months out of the year. The governor's recommended budget would keep us fully booked year-round, providing more income for my staff, vendors, local businesses, and actors. Because I believe in this industry and the potential it holds, I took a risk in February, and I invested in new casting studios in Representative Bailey's district. I hired local painters, designers, and handymen to get it off the ground. And the reason was is that I know that producers are desperate for new places to shoot, now that a few states have cut back on their incentive programs. Oregon is ideally poised to swoop up these high-paying jobs and the other revenue streams that come with it if we support and expand the program. So despite my own fears about the economy, I'm investing in film, and I hope you'll do the same. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, and thank you to everybody who made the trip to come testify. Any final questions for this panel?
No, just Mr. Co-Chair, thank you all for coming. This has been a real revelation of an industry that some of us, we only see what's up in front. We don't see what all the things that are going on behind. Fascinating.
Well said, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, and we will, with that, there were a few, couple more folks who are regulars who have signed up to testify, so we will carry over the public hearing on House Bill 2167 to Tuesday. And we will adjourn the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.